4. Why he should be lost owing to Lipotin, I did not know, and indeed I did not attach much significance to the words. I put it all down to his nerves. His terror, however, was remarkable, and I made up my mind to keep a careful watch on him. The very appearance of Lipotin as he came in assured us that he had, on this occasion, a special right to come in spite of the prohibition. He brought with him an unknown gentleman, who must have been a new arrival in the town. In reply to the senseless stare of my petrified friend, he called out immediately in a loud voice, "I'm bringing you a visitor, a special one. I make bold to intrude on your solitude. Mr. Kirillov, a very distinguished civil engineer, and what's more, he knows your son, the much-esteemed Pyotr Stepanovich, very intimately. And he has a message from him. He's only just arrived."
"The message is your own addition," the visitor observed curtly. "There's no message at all, but I certainly do know Verovinsky. I left him in the X-Province, 10 days ahead of us."
Stepan Trofimovich mechanically offered his hand and motioned him to sit down. He looked at me, he looked at Lipotin, and then, as though suddenly recollecting himself, sat down himself, though he still kept his hat and stick in his hands without being aware of it.
"Bah, but you were going out yourself. I was told that you were quite knocked up with work." "Yes, I'm ill, and you see, I meant to go for a walk.
Stepan Trofimovich checked himself, quickly flung his hat and stick on the sofa and turned crimson. Meanwhile, I was hurriedly examining the visitor. He was a young man, about 27, decently dressed, well-made, slender and dark, with a pale, rather muddy-coloured face and black, lustreless eyes. He seemed rather thoughtful and absent-minded, spoke jerkily and ungrammatically, transposing words in rather a strange way, and getting muddled if he attempted a sentence of any length. Lipotin was perfectly aware of Stepan Trofimovich's alarm, and was obviously pleased at it. He sat down in a wicker chair, which he dragged almost into the middle of the room, so as to be at an equal distance between his host and the visitor, who had installed themselves on sofas on opposite sides of the room. His sharp eyes darted inquisitively from one corner of the room to another.
"It's a long while since I've seen Petrusha. You met abroad?"
Stepan Trofimovich managed to mutter to the visitor.
"Both here and abroad."
"Alexei Nilitch has only just returned himself after living 4 years abroad," put in Lipotin. "He has been travelling to perfect himself in his speciality, and has come to us because he has good reasons to expect a job on the building of our railway bridge, and he's now waiting for an answer about it. He knows the Drozdovs and Lizaveta Nikolaevna through Pyotr Stepanovich." The engineer sat, as it were, with a ruffled air, and listened with awkward impatience. It seemed to me that he was angry about something. "He knows Nikolai Vsevolodovich, too."
"Do you know Nikolai Vsevolodovich?"
inquired Stepan Trofimovich.
"I know him, too. It's a very long time since I've seen Petrusha, and I feel I have so little right to call myself a father. C'est le mot. How did you leave him?"
"Oh, yes, I left him. He comes himself," replied Mr. Kirillov, in haste to be rid of the question again. He certainly was angry.
"He's coming. At last, you see, it's very long since I've seen Petrusha."
Stepan Trofimovich could not get away from this phrase.
"Now I expect my poor boy, to whom I have been so much to blame. That is, I mean to say, when I left him in Petersburg, I, in short, looked on him as a non-entity. Quelque chose dans ce genre. He was a very nervous boy, you know, emotional and very timid. When he said his prayers going to bed, he used to bow down to the ground, and make the sign of the cross on his pillow, that he might not die in the night. Je m'en souviens. Enfin. No artistic feeling whatever. Not a sign of anything higher, of anything fundamental. No embryo of a future ideal. C'était comme un petit idiot. But I'm afraid I am incoherent, excuse me. You came upon me.
You say seriously that he crossed his pillow? The engineer asked, suddenly with marked curiosity.
Yes, he used to.
All right, I just asked. Go on. Stepan Trofimovitch looked interrogatively at Liputin.
I'm very grateful to you for your visit, but I must confess I'm not in a condition just now. But allow me to ask where you are lodging.
At Filipov's, in Bogoyavlensky Street.
Ah, that's where Shatov lives, I observed involuntarily.
Just so, in the very same house, cried Liputin. Only Shatov lodges above in the attic while he's down below at Captain Lebyadkin's. He knows Shatov, too, and he knows Shatov's wife. He was very intimate with her abroad.
Comment? Do you really know anything about that unhappy marriage, de ce pauvre ami and that woman?
Cried Stepan Trofimovitch, carried away by sudden feeling.
You are the first man I've met who has known her personally. And if only—
What nonsense! The engineer snapped out, flushing all over.
How you do add to things, Liputin? I've not seen Shatov's wife. I've only once seen her in the distance and not at all close. I know Shatov. Why do you add things of all sorts?
He turned round sharply on the sofa, clutched his hat, then laid it down again, and settling himself down once more as before, fixed his angry black eyes on Stepan Trofimovitch with a sort of defiance. I was at a loss to understand such strange irritability.
Excuse me, Stepan Trofimovitch observed impressively. I understand that it may be a very delicate subject.
No sort of delicate subject in it. And indeed, it's shameful. And I didn't shout at you that it's nonsense, but at Liputin, because he adds things.
Excuse me if you took it to yourself.
I know Shatov, but I don't know his wife at all. I don't know her at all.
I understand. And if I insisted, it's only because I'm very fond of our poor friend. Noir irascible ami, and have always taken an interest in him. In my opinion, that man changed his former, possibly over-youthful, but yet sound ideas too abruptly, and now he says all sorts of things about Notre Sainte-Russie, to such a degree that I've long explained this upheaval in his whole constitution, I can only call it that, to some violent shock in his family life, and in fact to his unsuccessful marriage. I, who know my poor Russia like the fingers on my hand, and have devoted my whole life to the Russian people, I can assure you that he does not know the Russian people. And what's more,
I don't know the Russian people at all either, and I haven't time to study them, the engineer snapped out again, and again he turned sharply on the sofa. Stepan Trofimovitch was pulled up in the middle of his speech.
He is studying them, he is studying them, interposed Liputin. He has already begun the study of them, and is writing a very interesting article dealing with the causes of the increase of suicide in Russia, and, generally speaking, the causes that lead to the increase or decrease of suicide in society. He has reached amazing results.
The engineer became dreadfully excited.
You have no right at all, he muttered wrathfully. I'm not writing an article. I'm not going to do silly things. I asked you confidentially, quite by chance. There's no article at all. I'm not publishing, and you haven't the right.
Liputin was obviously enjoying himself.
I beg your pardon. Perhaps I made a mistake in calling your literary work an article.
He is only collecting observations, and the essence of the question, or so to say its moral aspect, he is not touching at all. And indeed he rejects morality itself altogether, and holds with the last new principle of general destruction for the sake of ultimate good. He demands already more than 100 million heads for the establishment of common sense in Europe, many more than they demanded at the last Peace Congress. Alexei Nilitch goes further than anyone in that sense. The engineer listened with a pale and contemptuous smile. For half a minute, everyone was silent.
"All this is stupidly put in," Mr. Kirillov observed at last, with a certain dignity. "If I by chance had said some things to you and you caught them up again as you like, but you have no right, for I never speak to anyone. I scorn to talk. If one has a conviction, then it's clear to me. But you're doing foolishly. I don't argue about things when everything's settled. I can't bear arguing. I never want to argue."
"And perhaps you are very wise," Stepan Trofimovitch could not resist saying.
"I apologize to you, but I am not angry with anyone here," the visitor went on, speaking hotly and rapidly. "I have seen few people for 4 years. For 4 years I have talked little and have tried to see no one, for my own objects, which do not concern anyone else. For 4 years. Liputin found this out and is laughing. I understand and don't mind. I'm not ready to take offence, only annoyed at his liberty. And if I don't explain my ideas to you," he concluded unexpectedly, scanning us all with resolute eyes, "it's not at all that I'm afraid of your giving information to the government. That's not so. Please do not imagine nonsense of that sort."
No one made any reply to these words. We only looked at each other. Even Liputin forgot to snigger.
"Gentlemen, I'm very sorry." Stepan Trofimovitch got up resolutely from the sofa. "But I feel ill and upset. Excuse me."
"Ah, that's for us to go," Mr. Kirillov started, snatching up his cap. "It's a good thing you told us. I'm so forgetful."
He rose, and with a good-natured air went up to Stepan Trofimovitch, holding out his hand.
"I'm sorry you're not well, and I came." "I wish you every success among us," answered Stepan Trofimovitch, shaking hands with him heartily and without haste. "I understand that, if, as you say, you have lived so long abroad, cutting yourself off from people for objects of your own and forgetting Russia, you must inevitably look with wonder on us who are Russians to the backbone, and we must feel the same about you. Mais cela passera. I'm only puzzled at one thing. You want to build our bridge, and at the same time you declare that you hold with the principle of universal destruction. They won't let you build our bridge."
"What? What's that you said?
Ah, I say," Kirillov cried, much struck,
and he suddenly broke into the most frank and good-humoured laughter. For a moment his face took a quite childlike expression, which I thought suited him particularly. Liputin rubbed his hand with delight at Stepan Trofimovitch's witty remark. I kept wondering to myself why Stepan Trofimovitch was so frightened of Liputin, and why he had cried out, "I am lost," when he heard him coming. We were all standing in the doorway. It was the moment when hosts and guests hurriedly exchange the last and most cordial words, and then part to their mutual gratification. "The reason he's so cross today," Liputin dropped all at once, as it were casually, when he was just going out of the room, "is because he had a disturbance today with Captain Lebyadkin over his sister. Captain Lebyadkin thrashes that precious sister of his, the mad girl, every day with a whip, a real Cossack whip, every morning and evening. So Alexei Nilitch has positively taken the lodge so as not to be present. Well, goodbye."
"A sister? An invalid? With a whip?" Stepan Trofimovitch cried out, as though he had suddenly been lashed with a whip himself. "What sister? What Lebyadkin?
all his former terror came back in an instant.
Lebyadkin? Oh, that's the retired captain. He used only to call himself a lieutenant before. Oh, but what is his rank to me? What sister? Good heavens, you say Lebyadkin, but there used to be a Lebyadkin here.
That's the very man. Our Lebyadkin at Virginsky's, you remember?
But he was caught with forged papers.
Well, now he's come back. He's been here almost 3 weeks, and under the most peculiar circumstances.
Why, but he's a scoundrel.
As though no one could be a scoundrel among us. Liputin grinned suddenly, his knavish little eyes seeming to peer into Stepan Trofimovitch's soul.
Good heavens! I didn't mean that at all, though I quite agree with you about that, with you particularly. But what then? What then? What did you mean by that? You certainly meant something by that.
Why, it's all so trivial. This captain, to all appearances, went away from us at that time, not because of the forged papers, but simply to look for his sister, who was in hiding from him somewhere, it seems. Well, and now he's brought her, and that's the whole story. Why do you seem frightened, Stepan Trofimovitch? I only tell this from his drunken chatter, though. He doesn't speak of it himself when he's sober. He's an irritable man, and, so to speak, aesthetic in a military style. Only he has bad taste. And this sister is lame as well as mad. She seems to have been seduced by someone. And Mr. Lebyadkin has, it seems, for many years received a yearly grant from the seducer by way of compensation for the wound to his honour. So it would seem, at least from his chatter, though I believe it's only drunken talk. It's simply his brag. Besides, that sort of thing is done much cheaper. But that he has a sum of money is perfectly certain. 10 days ago he was walking barefoot, and now I've seen hundreds in his hands. His sister has fits of some sort every day. She shrieks, and he keeps her in order with the whip. You must inspire a woman with respect, he says. What I can't understand is how Shatov goes on living above him. Alexei Nilitch has only been 3 days with them. They were acquainted in Petersburg, and now he's taken the lodge to get away from the disturbance.
Is this all true? Said Stepan Trofimovitch, addressing the engineer.
You do gossip a lot, Liputin, the latter muttered wrathfully.
Mysteries, secrets. Where have all these mysteries and secrets among us sprung from?
Stepan Trofimovitch could not refrain from exclaiming. The engineer frowned, flushed red, shrugged his shoulders, and went out of the room. Alexei Nilitch positively snatched the whip out of his hand, broke it, and threw it out of the window, and they had a violent quarrel, added Liputin.
"Why are you chattering, Liputin? It's stupid. What for?"
Alexei Nilitch turned again instantly. "Why be so modest and conceal the generous impulses of one's soul? That is, of your soul. I'm not speaking of my own."
"How stupid it is, and quite unnecessary. Lebyadkin's stupid and quite worthless, and no use to the cause, and utterly mischievous. Why do you keep babbling all sorts of things? I'm going."
"Oh, what a pity!" cried Liputin with a candid smile. "Or I'd have amused you with another little story, Stepan Trofimovitch. I came, indeed, on purpose to tell you, though I dare say you've heard it already. Well, till another time. Alexei Nilitch is in such a hurry. Goodbye for the present. The story concerns Varvara Petrovna. She amused me the day before yesterday. She sent for me on purpose. It's simply killing. Goodbye." But at this, Stepan Trofimovitch absolutely would not let him go. He seized him by the shoulders, turned him sharply back into the room, and sat him down in a chair. Liputin was positively scared.
"Why, to be sure," he began, looking warily at Stepan Trofimovitch from his chair.
"She suddenly sent for me and asked me, confidentially, my private opinion. whether Nikolai Sievolodovitch is mad or in his right mind. Isn't that astonishing?"
"You're out of your mind," muttered Stepan Trofimovitch, and suddenly, as though he were beside himself, "Liputin, you know perfectly well that you only came here to tell me something insulting of that sort, and something worse."
In a flash, I recalled his conjecture that Liputin knew not only more than we did about our affair, but something else which we should never know.
"Upon my word, Stepan Trofimovitch," muttered Liputin, seeming greatly alarmed. "Upon my word,
hold your tongue and begin. I beg you, Mr. Kirillov, to come back too and be present. I earnestly beg you. Sit down, and you, Liputin, begin directly, simply, and without any excuses."
"If I had only known it would upset you so much, I wouldn't have begun at all. And of course I thought you knew all about it from Varvara Petrovna herself."
"You didn't think that at all. Begin. Begin, I tell you."
"Only do me the favour to sit down yourself, or how can I sit here when you are running about before me in such excitement? I can't speak coherently." Stepan Trofimovitch restrained himself and sank impressively into an easy chair. The engineer stared gloomily at the floor. Liputin looked at them with intense enjoyment.
"How am I to begin? I'm too overwhelmed."